Hello, my magical friends. My name's Ayumi. My pronouns are she, her, hers. And you're listening to Sparkle Side Chats with Magical Girl Ayu. Whether it's your first or 156th time listening, we welcome you to our space to celebrate magical girls from every corner of the world. We have a lot of news, and I've watched some things, and then we'll get to today's topic. So first thing, just as a quick heads up, as I'm sure everyone knows, Twitter has really gone, what's the nicest word way to say this? It's in the sewers, it's in the down of the dumps. So, well, the Twitter is functioning as best it can, just so you know that we have created a Tumblr page for the podcast. And we are, of course, still also on Instagram, so definitely keep following socials over there if you want to keep up with the podcast, just in case Twitter finally like explodes completely or something. I'm not sure. So getting to the actual news, it's been quite a news week, and this already feels like old news since it's been a while. So you've probably already seen, but we got a bunch of news regarding Otona Precure 23 Power of Hope, which comes out starting in October. So, of course, as this is the start of the new season of animation here in Japan, we're getting a lot of news all around, you know, of course. But yeah, since this is an upcoming show, we're getting a lot of news there. And in particular, the very exciting announcement of new visuals. So, of course, we had already seen the adult form of Nozomi Yumehara, who is also known as Cure Dream. But we also got visuals for the adult form of Rin Natsuki, who is Cure Rouge. And even more of a surprise, we got adult visuals for Mai Misho and Saki Hyuga from Futari wa Precure Splash Star. Now, if you're a longtime listener, you know that Splash Star is my favorite season. So when I tell you I cried, I panicked, I could not do anything else the rest of that day, when the news dropped, it was just absolutely shocking and delightful. I'm so thrilled. But yeah, next in the news, we got the announcement that Shy, the adaptation of the superhero comic that we had already heard announced previously, is officially going to come out in October as well, so mark your calendars. So Shy, again, is a superhero story in which a bunch of random people get superpowers, and that includes one girl from Japan who is basically fighting for and representing all of Japan, and her name is Shy. The comic is currently in, I believe, its 19th volume. It's quite hefty. I haven't gotten to the comic, but I hear it's entertaining. But in any case, you know, it's a pretty exciting little story, so we're talking about it here. We had already gotten the announcement of an adaptation of this series, Gushing Over Magical Girls, Maho Shoujo ni Akogarete, is... Unfortunately, it is a very mature series, so while I will be watching it for the sake of the podcast, I'm not sure I would recommend it to most people, just as a full disclosure there. But this series is officially going to come out in 2024, which means that we have two shows coming next year for sure in the genre that are about villains who like a magical girl or several magical girls, and are the star of their magical girl story, as Acro Trip is also confirmed for a 2024 release. But of course, these are both very different properties, so yeah, just keep that in mind. Either way, it'll be a very interesting year for sure. But yeah. And also, as Anime Expo was over the weekend, we got the announcement from Trigger that there is, in fact, going to be a new Pantheon's docking. Now, we already had that announcement, roughly speaking, teased to us prior to this, but the project is more official now. It is called New Pantheon's docking. The visuals we have are definitely different, but the designs are the same, which is disappointing to a lot of fans, considering the problematic aspects of that series. But otherwise, you know, still pretty exciting, as the show is pretty, yeah, pretty fun. It'll be interesting to see what there is waiting for us, as, you know, we don't know anything else yet about the project. There's no release date or anything, so this might be taking its time. It's really hard to tell, but yeah, we'll be here when it comes out. And finally, I wanted to mention that a Magical Girl visual novel was announced via Twitter last week. So user at VVFXVivify announced the development in progress of Starbright Agency. To quote this creator, this is a LGBTQIA+ romantic visual novel about being a professional magical girl trying to fake date your way into becoming the top scout in the city. Demo and more info coming soon. So all we have so far is the logo and this announcement, but any news for magical girls is good news. So with that, that's all for the news. So getting into what I've been watching, I did finish up a lot of shows as I promised. Quite a few of them will be topics on the podcast, so I'm just going to casually skip those and talk about Soaring Sky Precure. So Soaring Sky Precure had a pretty intense episode last week. You know, it's not always going to be a super nice, clean, happy ending. There are always going to be some intense moments. But yeah, this was a big surprise for a lot of fans, I think. And it was just really good, really emotionally intense, of course. And this is where it's like, okay, big plot stuff is happening. And it'll be very interesting to see how things move forward. Also, last week's episode was pretty great as well. I didn't get to talk about it, but it was, yeah, just a lot of fun, very exciting, again, just emotionally heart-wrenching, and also just a really beautifully animated episode. It looks like there was some outsourcing to another studio who did really great work. And next, we did finish up our watching of Yes, Precure 5 over in the Discord server. So if you are interested in watching along with us, we are slowly watching ES Precure 5 Go in anticipation for Otona Precure 23 Power of Hope in October. But otherwise, that is all I've watched that I need to report on. So yeah, with that, let's get on to today's topic. Today is a pretty big show. We're actually doing a lot of 90s shows this month. I didn't like realize it until I was putting the list together. But yes, it's pretty exciting. So today we are in the early 90s and looking at Hime-chan's Ribbon, or Hime's Ribbon, which is just a really, really super delightful show. We're only going to talk about the first half today. Despite everything, though, there is going to be a spoiler point because some big events happen in the first half of the show, the first quarter of the show, really. This is a show that I think is just a really fantastic little wholesome delight. And I think that if you like older magical girls, if you like the idea of the kind of classic magical girl that's not fighting, you should definitely watch the show. It is kind of a must-see. I have not read the comics yet, neither the original nor the reboot comic, but I definitely am looking forward to checking those out, mostly because I'm really curious about the differences between the comic and the adaptation, because there are a lot of interesting things going on in the adaptation that feel like they're exclusive to that, but it's not always easy to tell. So I have a delightful guest on today, Jimmy Sherfy, who was last on to talk about the first season of She-Ra, the reboot, and a little bit about the original She-Ra, of course. And he was a delight to have back on again. As Anime Expo was over the weekend, you know, Jimmy did mention quite a few cosplay things that he was doing, and you can definitely go over to his socials to see those. The Saban Moon one is just delightful. I shared it over in the Discord server as well. It's just so cool to see, you know, such a fun cosplay idea and all of that. And just before we get into the show itself, we do have to give some trigger warnings. So a trigger warning for drugging, kidnapping, death, and general misogyny and queerphobia. So not great stuff, but just so you know, it's there. It is the 90s. It's kind of like it can't be helped. And there's a lot of stuff about the very nature of the show that, you know, some of the situations do get a little out there. So yeah, But yeah, I think that's everything I need to mention up top. So again, please sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode with Jimmy Sherfy about Hime-chan's Ribbon, Part 1. So, we are here today to talk about the first half of Hime-chan's Ribbon, or Hime-chan no Ribbon, from 1992 to 1993. And I'm very delighted to have on a returning guest. Can you please introduce yourself?
Hello, I'm Jimmy Sherfy. Second time here on this podcast, mostly known as a cosplayer and drag performer. And a big old school anime and definitely Magical Girl fan.
Yes, yes. You were last on to talk about She-Ra, which was a delight. I think really early on when, I think maybe when you first started following the podcast, I want to say on Instagram, you like mentioned how much you wanted to hear about this show. So
that's right. Yes, I did. Yeah. And you hadn't watched it at the time, I believe, at all.
Yes, that's right. So when it came time to choosing someone for this show, it seemed only right. Now, we're only going to talk about the first half of the show because it is 61 episodes.
A little long.
It's a bit of a long one. And that's good because, you know, it means it was popular. But yeah, so this show, again, is from 92 to 93. It's based on the comic that ran from 1990 to 1994. So, of course, it's not going to cover the whole story of the comic and all of that, but this is a very interesting early 90s show that really has this great balance of exactly what the old Machoko used to be like. We kind of have two different Magical Girl characters here, but before we get into that, we do have one more very important question, which is, Jimmy, what have you been enjoying in the genre since your last time on the podcast?
Oh, okay. So right now I'm actually watching Ultra Manic.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen this show at all or heard of it?
I have not watched it. I do know it's the only Magical Girl show that has a character named Ayumi in it.
Oh, so, yeah.
I'm eager to check it out at some point, but...
I watched there's an OAV kind of episode and then the series, and I'm only a few episodes in, maybe 10. And which is, for a Magical Girl show, 10 episodes usually isn't very much. They're usually very long.
Right.
It's very cute. It actually reminds me a little bit of the show we're talking about today, just because it involves a witch and going to high school or junior high. I can't remember. They're around that age. I kind of get confused in anime when what age they are. If they say they're in junior high and they look older. So I get a little mixed up there. So I could be wrong. I can't remember. So that one's cute. I've been enjoying it. Well, I've been rewatching Sailor Stars. Kind of because the new movies are coming out.
Yes.
Yeah, very exciting. And I've been watching the English dub on the Blu-rays, just because I've never watched the English dub, and I kind of want to, you know, see how they did that. And I'm kind of about halfway through that. And I watched a few episodes of Mary Bell.
Oh, yes.
And it was cute. I like the animation style, but I was very bored. It seemed like for a much younger audience.
Sure, sure.
But it was one I always wanted to check out. And I watched the newest season of Miraculous Ladybug recently.
Oh, yes.
And I've been keeping up with that. I think there might be more episodes on Disney Plus. Maybe in the last couple of weeks, I need to check an update and see.
I'm still very new to trying to follow Ladybug as it comes out, and it just feels very hectic. Where it's different episodes come out in different regions and not in the same order.
Yeah, different orders. I kind of just looked. I watched it originally on Netflix, and now it's on Disney Plus. But even then, some of the episodes seem to be out of order because certain characters are showing up and they haven't even been introduced. So
Yeah. The production order and the airing order are so different. It's pretty wild.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But how are you enjoying the season so far?
I think it's one of the best, actually. The last couple, it's kind of like, well, it's very Magical Girl because I'm, but it, I would say even worse in the fact of like nothing happens for a long time, and then bam, like big story arc is kind of, without saying any spoilers, that's just kind of what's happened in the last couple seasons. And I feel like that happens a lot in this style of media.
Sure. Yeah, I know that there are certain things that like are still, people have been wanting them to happen already and it hasn't. And I've still only watched the first season, so it'll be interesting once I finally jump into things and continue the show. But yeah, it's just yeah, it's a really fascinating show to see people react to as it comes out. Oh, are you excited for the Ladybug movie?
Yeah, I watched the trailer a few days ago actually. And well, I thought it was maybe going to have like a theatrical release, but it looks like it's just going on Netflix, but you know, more cool content to enjoy.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people expected as well. Maybe it's gonna come out in theaters in France, I would want to say. That's, but I'm not sure.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't really look that up, but I
Yeah,
probably there it will be.
I can imagine. But yeah, awesome. So definitely a lot of both old and new stuff. So that's pretty cool. So yeah, let's get into this show. We actually, despite the name, we do have two magical girl characters. So Himeko Nonohana is our main regular girl who lives in, our world. She's 13 years old and she is kind of a typical Majuko in that she's a very boyish character, which comes up a lot in the series. And she's very sporty and athletic, and she can be a little bit rude and pretty blunt about like saying how she feels and stuff like that. On her birthday, this witch from the magic world, who happens to look exactly like her but with long hair, named Erica, presents her with this gift, this ribbon that she can put in her hair. And there's this whole thing in the magic world where the witches and wizards have to invent something as part of their magic training, and they test it out on the person in the non-magic world that looks exactly like them. There's like an equivalent for everyone, which is very helpful for character design. And they have to use that invention for a year to kind of test its merit. And in Erica's case, she had created this ribbon, which would give someone the ability to transform into anyone they'd like. So in order to do that, Himeko has to stand in front of any reflective surface, so typically a mirror. And she has to, say the magic words. She can only transform into a real person that exists. Unlike, some other shows where they have like a thing where you can turn into a vocation or something. She has to actually just turn into someone else. It's an exciting power to have, and she doesn't necessarily start off using it well, but the kind of first story bit is her kind of figuring out how to use this and how to be appropriate with it. The other important thing is that with the use of this magic, her beloved stuffed animal, the lion Pocota, comes to life. Pocota is so cute. I love him so much.
Cutest like character
Yes.
in the
And
whole show for sure.
the kind of first arc is Himeko going through trying to deal with her crush on her upperclassman Hasekura, who is, a really kind guy and like someone that like sure anyone might like him, but it's like she has such strong feelings that she can't like get out the feelings and like actually talk to him or anything. And in our first little story arc, she figures out that through having to transform into various people, including her sister and her upperclassmen, she figures out that he and her older sister have known each other by riding the same bus, but like they never spoke to each other, so they didn't even know each other's names. But they had developed feelings for each other in that space, which is like such a real thing that like teenagers do.
Somehow.
I don't know. I totally feel that like as a someone who commuted to school, like that is such a real thing to like have your little like commuter crush, like someone who you always share a bus or train with.
That's true.
But in this case, something actually happens here. So through a whole series of wild events where, you know, one confesses to the other, but it's actually Himeko in disguise. And so she has to figure out how to, like, handle all of that. She doesn't want to get in their way. And of course, it hurts for her, but she's able to kind of, you know, just move on over time. And another major character that we get in the show is Daichi, who's this boy at school who's kind of a troublemaker. He's always getting chased around by his teachers for misbehaving and so on, like roller skating in school levels of misbehaving. He keeps running into Himeko, like, as she's, you know, going on her own adventures, and she even transforms into him and he catches her, and he's like, okay, this is weird. What's going on?
That was a really funny scene.
Yes, yes. Where she's like, oh my god, it's another me. Oh, okay. And like runs away. It's really good. By the way, you can definitely cut in at any time because I'm just going through the
plot okay, stuff. I just didn't want to interrupt. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I was going to say, well, that was a really funny episode. And I love how they just kind of use the same character types of the boy who's like mean to the girl in a magical girl show. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, do they like each other? Do they not? Like, it's kind of funny how that plays out. Mm-hmm. In this show in particular, I actually quite enjoyed it versus maybe, I don't know, a lot of magical girl shows is just kind of repetitive with that storyline, but this one was pretty funny.
Sure. I think it definitely, you know, it definitely depends. I think that at the very beginning I wasn't really feeling Daichi, but of course, you know, over time you like get to know him as a person, and so mm-hmm. things kind of just like Himeko does, honestly. But it's like really funny to see that the way that like they interact is just like constantly kind of butting heads and stuff, but then like yeah, they do eventually grow to like suddenly be friends. I guess in particular after episode 8 when Daichi's little brother gets kidnapped suddenly. That was a pretty wild episode, but one where, you know, Himeko is able to help out, and in so doing she has to reveal something that Daichi was already kind of suspicious of, which is that she can transform. So you know, despite all of that, you know, and there is like discussion on in the magic world, and you know, Erica, after she gives Hime the ribbon, she's not allowed to go back to the human world. We see throughout the show her watching over things with her broomstick named Chappie, which is another mm-hmm. magical girl reference.
That was so funny to me, too. That's one of the most ridiculous characters in the show, is this talking broom.
Yes, yes. But I love Chappie as well. Chappie has a fun personality.
Yeah, he's cute.
Yeah. So yeah, like with that, you know, there's a discussion as far as the rules, because she wasn't supposed to let anyone know that she has this magic ribbon. But, you know, this was kind of a desperate situation, and they were trying to think about whether or not they were going to take it away from her and remove her memories, when another mm-hmm. problem comes to school, and that is the character of Sei, who is from the magic world and is also Erica's fiance. Erica's a princess, by the way. I didn't mention that, but it is important to know she is a princess. He seems to constantly like flirt with Himeko and gets her feelings riled up, and it turns out that he's actually trying to steal her ribbon, and it's because of his arrival mm-hmm. that they had decided not to take away Himeko's memories, which was a lot. But yeah, so they decide that it's like, okay, you know, as long as Daichi doesn't tell anyone else,
they'll let this one slide.
Yeah, but anyone else, definitely not. But yeah, Sei is an interesting kind of like mini antagonist.
Yeah, he was worse than Daichi. Like mm-hmm. he's causing more trouble than he was, I felt.
Oh yeah, so yeah, funny. Yeah. Because like he has the ability to control animals, and in particular that also means being able to control Pokuta. So Pokuta would think that like he was asleep, and then suddenly would be going out and like attacking Daichi and all this other stuff. It was like so. It was so sad because, in particular for Daichi, like, he was making Daichi look like a bad guy. And, of course, because Himeko was like, wow, this guy, like, confessed his feelings to me. There's no way he could be bad. Which is like, ugh, girl, you have so much to learn.
I know. He was playing her the whole time.
Yeah, yeah.
I did like the little talking crow.
Yes, yes.
I can't remember his name, but that was a funny little kind of sidekick character.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He's a funny little guy. I think also reminded me a little bit of the crow in Megu-chan, who's also kind of a little working for the villain kind of character, but not actually a bad guy, I guess. Yeah, that's Kantaro is his name.
Oh, actually, I haven't seen that show, other than like the openings, and I really want to watch it. I listened to your episode about it.
Yeah, I think you would definitely like Megu-chan for sure.
Yeah,
It's
for
definitely
sure.
up your alley. And yeah, there's this like it's very funny. After he's found out and Himiko like fights his magic in order to keep the ribbon, he kind of just like sticks around sort of, but like doesn't go after her anymore or doesn't go after the ribbon anymore. It's kind of an interesting sort of thing there.
Yeah, and he just kind of shows up every now and then too.
And then we need to talk about the character of Hikaru Hibino, who is the president of the Tai Chi fan club.
Yeah, she's like the worst person on earth at first.
She reminds me, because I kind of like watched all the Studio Gallop shows out of order, but she reminds me a lot of the kind of main antagonistic girl in Nurse Angel Yurika SOS, where like she thinks she is going to definitely like get this guy in her case. She has a big crush on Daichi. He is not interested.
President of his fan club.
Yeah, and there are two other
Is
members.
her.
She's not, she's not alone in the fan club, but there's this whole thing about like how, she's always like very threatened by Himiko, even though at the beginning Himiko's like, I don't even like this guy. Why are you talking to me about this? I don't care. But yeah, there's just a lot of kind of hijinks and stuff coming from her just always being suspicious of Himiko for like even talking to Daichi or whatever.
She's kind of like a character you kind of like love to hate almost, I feel like. Like you want like you're like, what's she gonna do next? It's ridiculous.
Yes, and she's definitely, she's very full of herself and will always say whatever is necessary to make herself look like, she knew what was going on the whole time. But her suspicions become like a major factor in episode 13, which is a very fun episode because SMAP, the group that does the opening and ending songs for the series, they make a quote unquote appearance in the show. By which I mean Himiko transforms into each of the members one by one, trying to say that like, oh yes, SMAP has come to our school to do a performance, and no one thinks it's suspicious that it's like only one at a time on stage of
Yeah.
this whole group.
This happened to like a lot, I feel like, in the show. Like she's in one place and then she's in another at like the same similar location. And it just definitely reminded me of like the movie Mrs. Doubtfire.
Oh, sure.
Just that kind of any movie like that too, that kind of scenario. That's definitely like how they kind of hype up the antics, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. So it's like this like really stressful thing, and we'll talk about how Himiko is able to kind of deal with that problem later. But in this case, it turned out to be kind of a dangerous thing because SMAP is a very popular group. Like, I don't know, Jimmy, are you aware about like the popularity of SMAP or their history at this time?
No, I had no idea, actually.
Okay, yeah. So SMAP is kind of like the first big boy band in Japan in the 90s.
Oh, okay.
Like in particular, the reason that they became really big is they were the kind of first group to do a variety show of their own, which is at this point in Japan like very much the standard. Like a lot of idol groups and so on, if they don't have their own show, they're constantly like guesting on other variety shows and stuff. Like it's become a part of idol life, I guess, idol activities, and this is the origin of that.
Oh, okay.
So it's like imagine the Backstreet Boys are in a magical girl show. It's
Okay,
like,
got it. Yeah, that's what I was envisioning, sort of something like
yeah,
that.
it's like that level of like, oh my goodness. It's very interesting because their music is really hard to get now, but they were so big at the time.
Yeah, when in that episode, I didn't know that they were a real group.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, again, they do the opening and ending, just as they will later do for the next show that Studio Gallop does, which is Cha Cha.
That's a great one too.
Yes. And
I haven't finished the whole show. I need to start over.
yeah. Also, in the case of both of those shows, one of the members does a voice of the character. So in this case, I believe it's Daichi is voiced by one of the members of SMAP.
Oh,
Yeah.
very cool. I didn't know this. Yeah, this is some good trivia.
So yeah, so you know this episode, you know, Himiko again is transforming into various characters, these various guys, and you know, in so doing, kind of starts a frenzy of all these, you know, teenage girls who want to, you know, be closer to their idols and swarm the stage and everything. And Hikaru ends up chasing her out of the school and everything, which then gets public attention as everyone goes, "Hey, that member of SMAP is like out in public. We gotta go find him and like see what he's up to." And this goes all the way to paparazzo finding them and taking a picture, which is like really wild. They're like, "Oh yeah, this guy is definitely like dating this 13-year-old girl who is like
Oh
stalking him."
my
And so it becomes this whole thing of like trying to avoid like this kind of scandal and trying to explain like what's going on, which leads us to like the next few episodes where Hikaru is starting to piece together that something else is going on, especially after she notices that whenever Himiko transforms into someone, her ribbon becomes a necklace. Like it's really easy to miss, I guess, but she realizes like, hey, that guy was wearing that necklace. And then I also saw Daichi wearing that necklace at another time. That's really weird.
She goes into like full detective mode around that time. I you were
Yes. To the point where Himiko temporarily starts to take off her ribbon. It's just a safety measure. She can't use magic when it's not on her head. Though it also does mean every time she does that, like Pokota goes back to being a regular stuffed animal.
yeah, poor little guy.
Yeah. She also suspects, like, hey, I think Himiko's stuffed lion is talking or something. It might be alive. So that's another reason why she takes off the ribbon, is to like help him to disguise himself as an actual plushie, which he
Yeah.
originally was. Yeah. And it's in that time that like she actually takes him away, because they go on like an episode 15 is a school ski trip. And in his efforts to help Hikaru, he actually ends up getting a tear in his fabric, which after a certain point like ends up resulting in him actually like having pain, experiencing pain, which is so sad. Yeah, like
Yeah.
when he's like back to life. This kind of arc like really amps up, as the next thing is Hikaru comes to the conclusion that Himiko is actually a yokai. You know, like rather than like a you know magic user or something, and tries to get her to transform, but she doesn't remember what the actual incantation is. I think she thinks it's like parasol instead of
Yeah, it
parallel.
was something very close, but not quite.
Yeah, which is fun. Oh, the other thing that's really important to keep in mind about her transformations is that Himiko can only transform for a short time. If she doesn't transform back within that time limit, she will stay in that form forever. And so like when she gets close to the time, her little necklace will like beep and stuff like that. That's something that's happened in a few episodes. And in this case, she gets tricked by Hikaru to like transform into Hikaru so that they can prove that she does in fact like use magic. She can transform, and she gets trapped in the
Of
state.
all the characters for her to be stuck as.
Yeah. It is like, you know, very stressful, and it's like something where, you know, it's as far as anyone else knows, she is gone missing, but actually she is like just disguised as her worst enemy. And at this point, Erica also comes down to try to help her, and it's too late. So what Erica does is she disguises herself as Himiko for the time being. She cuts off all her hair. It's, you know, like a really emotional time. Like Erica is like so cool. She's such a good like friend to
Yeah,
Himiko, I
and
feel
technically
like.
I've always thought like, oh, she's like so kind to her, and I was like, she doesn't even really know her. She just watches her through from another world.
I
It's
mean,
really
I
cute
think, you
though.
know, yeah, watching over her, she does get to really know her
Yeah. Well, I mean,
well.
like she gets to
Yeah.
know her, but I feel like Himiko doesn't really get to know Erica as much, or at first, I guess.
Yes,
It's
at
just a
first.
funny dynamic, and if you think about it.
Yes. So, you know, despite Erica's best effort, she wasn't able to help out Himiko at this time. Yeah, it's very emotionally intense as they try to figure out if there's any way around like this particular magic. Erica begs her father, the king of the magic world, to help, but he insists that the only way that Himiko could possibly de-transform is if she dies, which is like very scary. And then episode 18, which is when we learn like this kind of fact, things actually turn out to be shockingly closer to that than anyone expected. Where yeah, there's a car and Himiko jumps into the way to rescue
Erica dressed like as her, though. It's kind of confusing to explain for anyone who hasn't seen it, but that scene.
Yes, right. It looks like Hikaru is rescuing Himiko, but it's actually Himiko rescuing Erica. And yeah, she gets hit by the car and she dies.
Very Minky Momo moment almost.
Yes. Exactly. It was another one, and I was thinking about that because I mean, Mickey Momo's case, that was something that happened, and I have not read the comic for this show, so I don't know how much is taken from the comic and how much is like original. I'm sure the SMAP stuff is original, but otherwise, yeah, the way that this played out, like for Mickey Momo's case, that was something that the animators did because the show was getting canceled due to the lack of toy sales. So she gets hit by a toy truck in that show.
Iconic.
Yeah. So in this case, it's like, wow, that's an interesting reference, which, it's like a relevant thing that the creators here would have all been aware of. But yeah, so she dies and she gets brought back to life because that's easier to do with magic. And in so doing, Erica literally gives up years of her life and gives them to Himiko. And like magic users, people live a really long time anyway. But
For her, it was probably nothing, you know. Here you go. Here's a few years.
I mean, it's still like something, but it's but
Yeah,
it's still like that's how close they are to each other. For a while, there's some like silly episodes. Of course, we have a Valentine's Day episode because we need one of those, and an episode like looking at Himiko's father's job because he's a film director and he was working with this idol. That's a cute episode 20. But yeah, there's like a lot of like. A little bit of episodic stuff going on for a while. There's a cute episode where she is a grandmother. She gets to disguise herself as a grandmother for this. I guess it's called a gate ball. I don't know if it's actually a real old people sport or like based on another kind of old people sport. It did look similar to croquet in any case.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that either.
Yeah.
I thought maybe it was like a cultural thing that I just didn't know
I mean, it could be,
it.
but like, I'm not an old person, so I'm not aware of
Yeah.
the sport. Yeah. Oh, episode 23 is another one that I thought was really good, where Aiko, Himiko's older sister, finds or like chances upon Himiko's diary while she's
Oh,
cleaning up her room
yes.
because Aiko is this interesting, like, ideal girly girl in a way. We'll talk about that stuff in a minute, but.
She's like soft-spoken, kind of compared to Himiko, at
Right. And so she finds this notebook that is all about, like, just all these writings from Himiko about the guy who is now her boyfriend. And so this discovery, like, really makes her think about, if she had done something wrong by, like, dating this boy and what this means for her younger sister. And also, it ends up being something where she ends up admitting to Himiko that, like, she had felt like maybe he would prefer a girl like her. And, like, she was feeling, very self-conscious and feeling like maybe she wasn't like his type or whatever. And so it was a really beautiful moment for Himiko to admit, like, I like someone else actually, and this first love of mine was, something that was really important to me, but it's done. It's over and that's fine. And it's a really cute episode.
Yeah, she's like, it's old news now, girl. Like,
I
moved
mean,
on.
yeah, it's so funny because this is episode 23, and like all that stuff with her crush was at the beginning of the show, right? Like episodes like 1 through 4, roughly. It is technically, yeah, it's been basically like 20 weeks since that happened, so that's a long time in a teen girl's life.
Exactly. This is like, I mean, it was kind of cool for them to reference something that happened so long ago in the episodes.
Yes, exactly. But it does also leave a very interesting note where, she had admitted that she likes someone else now, but she hasn't mentioned who it is. So that is it's interesting kind of little hint towards the future of the show, possibly. But yeah, and then episode 24 gives us another important thing, which is Himiko's second item slash toy that you can go buy. That is a magic palette, which looks like a normal eyeshadow palette, but if you push away some things, you get this little, there's like a little ribbon inside there, and she can use this to make a copy of herself so that she can look like she is at home, but actually, or like at school or whatever, but she's actually elsewhere. So in this case, it's specifically used so that she can go to the magic world to go to Erica's birthday party, which is really cool.
That was one of my favorite episodes.
Yeah. Do you want to talk more about that? Like about why?
Well, I thought it was kind of funny how you can correct me if I'm wrong because you watched it probably more recent. Like almost all the like how do I say it, the matching characters in the magic world, they had like opposite personalities.
Oh yeah.
So I thought that was really funny dynamic. Is there more than one episode where they go to the magic world? I feel like there is, besides ones that I know there's maybe at least one you haven't seen, but there might be one I'm mixing up. Yeah.
Yeah, there's another episode where it's not that they go to the magic world, but like we see the magic world more after this episode.
Oh, okay. I just don't remember the same episode where Pocota has like a little crush.
Yeah, little pink.
Yeah, I thought that was really cute. Just as something like to mix it up when they go to the magic world versus like some of the episodes got a little repetitive.
Sure.
It's either like high stakes or like something cute happens. And then this one was like totally different. So I just really enjoyed this one just for like a fun kind of totally different vibe.
With this show having two of the archetypes of traditional magical girls, we have this like ability to kind of go back and forth between the classic like life lesson episodes and yeah, just like literal fun fantastical stuff in this case. And yeah, it's really funny because like so Sei is the main like guy that we see who for whatever reason he's special enough that he can go back and forth between the two
Yeah,
worlds.
right. I was wondering about that.
Yeah, but he has a younger brother who looks exactly like Daichi but is just the worst guy. He has like all these different little inventions that are also always causing trouble. So in this case, you know, like you said, Pocota meets Pink, who is this tiny little pink cat who's super cute and very just very polite and all that. And they immediately hit it off. It's definitely mutual, and they have like a kind of little date. And this like not a Daichi like pranks them by putting this spell on Pocota to make him say the opposite of what he thinks, which means that like he insults Pink, and Pink runs away crying. And it's like so sad, and I was so angry for them. Like I can't believe you would do that. But we see like when he comes back later, it's like this kid is always trouble. It's always bad news. Yeah. Of course, things do, you know, work out and everything, but it's like this cute little kind of side story with those two, with like this little cat romance.
Yeah, and that's like almost the thing I remember the most from the episode because it was just really fun. I also
Totally.
really want a Pocota plushie. Like, I need to
Yes,
look
me
on
too.
eBay. I feel like it could be very expensive, or maybe not too much because this isn't the most popular magical girl show from the 90s, so
Well,
maybe not.
I think well, so this show it never got an official English release. It did get a release in some other countries. I believe in namely, let me double check here. Yeah, it got released in Taiwan, Thailand, China, Korea, and Italy. But because it never like came out, like not even the comic came out
Yeah.
in English. So that might affect things in the US as far as availability, but it was a huge show wherever it did air. Obviously, it was
Okay.
huge just like because the show went on for so many episodes.
It's true.
That's usually the main sign that it was a hit. But yeah, I think let me double check because I kind of want to know also because I also want one of
Yeah.
those.
Oh, let's look it up. Yeah. Well, I knew of this show actually, kind of in the late 90s, early 2000s, because I was from like the era of like fan subbed anime on VHS that people would like trade back and forth. And this was
Sure.
always one on the list. Like, I think someone had fan subbed the entire series, or at least a good portion of it. And I would see the images and I was like, oh, it looks very cute. It kind of looked like Cha Cha or even like Marmalade Boy. I thought it looked
Oh,
similar to that anime. It's probably around the same years. And just for some reason, that this one I never watched back then, or I just never got into it. And then during quarantine, I marathoned the whole thing.
Of course, things are, more accessible now with the internet and fan subs and that, but at the
Yeah.
time it was more trouble. So it looks like depending on the size of your plushie for Polka Dot, it can go from quite cheap to not too expensive, actually. So
Oh.
that's good. Like reasonable considering it's a plushie from the 90s. There might have been more recent creations, like more recent plushies of him, but yeah, I think the most expensive I'm seeing is like 6,000 yen, which is not too bad, all things
How
considered.
much is that in ish in US
So
dollars?
that's like $50.
Okay, that's a lot for a plushie, but for a
Right, exactly.
collectible.
That's how you have to think about it.
I read that there was a remake of the manga
Oh, yes,
in
Colorful.
like 2009 or so. I'm just guessing on the year. I don't remember exactly. So I don't know if it like had a, I don't know, a little boost in popularity around then.
Yeah, the 2009 comic, it's, there were a lot of interesting kind of little remakes at this time in the 2000s, as this was the 2000s magical girl boom in general. And I don't know if it really had an effect on like that kind of, popularity. Again, this was like a really huge comic that went on for several years and then had a pretty long running show. So I think it just kind of like already was popular, and then they did, this reboot comic, which and it was only four volumes, so it was long, but like not super long. So it was like only a few
Okay.
years, yeah.
Whenever you Google this show or comic, that reboot never really comes up, like the images. So I maybe that's why I just assume it's not as well known.
Yeah, I'm not sure why they like. Again, there were a lot of reboots at this time. It's interesting because the art style reminds me so much of like Shigokyata, which was also at that time.
Oh, okay,
It's definitely a very 2000s reboot.
yeah.
Especially because the original comic went on for longer, like past the show. I definitely want to see what the differences are between them. But yeah, so I guess like we have one final little mini arc to get through here in this bit of the show, which is the introduction of another character who seems like she's going to be around for a while and then is not. And that is Daichi's like childhood friend, Yuka. So Yuka's an idol, or like a budding idol. So she's starting to do idol activities, but she's not like famous yet. She had moved away when she was younger, and she's moving back to town in order to be able to kind of see her old friend again. And it's very clear that like she has romantic feelings for Daichi, and she always calls him Daichan because that's what she called him when they were kids, like very young.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a very interesting thing where like she is clearly a threat romantically to Himiko, but Himiko's kind of like refusing to admit that at first. And then, she's also a little bit of an actress, and Himiko is in the drama club at school. As this is the new year, they're getting very excited about starting a new play. In this case, it's Peter Pan, and Himiko was cast to be Peter Pan. She's very excited about this. Of course, I mean, who wouldn't be excited to get a lead role like that?
Iconic, playing Peter Pan, why not?
I think it's an interesting choice for her. It makes sense,
Since Peter Pan's, played by a girl usually in the theatrical performances.
But in this case, what happens is Yuka comes in and is like, "Oh, I want to join the club. Also, I want to be Peter Pan." And it's very sudden, and it's very clear it's like out of jealousy, because Himiko clearly is like close to Daichi and has a good rapport with him now, as opposed to like her trying to hang out with Daichi and Daichi like not being interested.
Definitely.
So it's like this thing that, like, of course, breaks Himiko's heart, because they have, like, a week to, like, both prepare. So basically just, like, re-audition for the role. And she's a professional, so she does a great job.
Yeah.
And Himiko still has to read from the scripts and everything. So it just feels, like, all very unfair. And she's, like, feeling really distraught. And she also feels like she's losing her friendship with Daichi because she's always around him as well. So it's just, like, this, like, kind of dark time for her. She's trying to figure out her emotions. And then there's another kidnapping episode. It was pretty wild because, like, Yuga gets kidnapped. These guys that look like they're, like, almost like agents or gangsters or something that capture her. And Himiko, again, gets to use both of her powers. So she makes a copy of herself. And the copy of herself, by the way, we didn't mention, is, like, much more feminine compared to the regular Himiko. It's, like, it's part of her, but it's not the whole her. So it's,
yeah,
like, you know, her personality is different.
How do I say this without sounding mean to the copy? She seemed like a dumb version of her, I guess. Or, like, I don't want to say, like, a bimbo, maybe? Like,
yeah, I wouldn't go so far as to say it's that.
Yeah, not quite, but it's, like,
it's not a good portrayal of, like,
yeah,
femininity, like, for sure. Yeah. To say, like, she's, like, the lesser version of Himiko. Yeah,
it's like, I guess it's, you know, when you copy something, it's not going to be as good as the original. I guess that was the point, maybe.
right yeah, but giving her that personality wasn't great. <It's a choice. laughs> Yeah, but yeah, so the whole thing with the kidnapping, like, you know, Himiko makes a copy of herself and then actually goes after, you know, Yuka's kidnappers. It turns out that, like, the kidnapper was this old man who was just a really big fan and has no sense of boundaries whatsoever.
Oh, that was so awkward, actually.
Yeah, that was so wild. And that was, at that time, you know, Himiko was disguised as Yuka so that Yuka could escape. Yuka doesn't know that she's transformed, of course, or anything, but it's like this, yeah, it's just like this wild case of, like, and of course, Himiko being herself was like, what's wrong with you? Like, just unafraid to just be completely brash about, like, how weird it is to kidnap your favorite idol because you just love, yeah, them so much.
I do kind of love that about the character, though. She's kind of very upfront.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Kind of very, like, well, I thought of Sailor Jupiter from Sailor Moon. She reminded me of her a
mm-hmm,
lot.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've seen the anime Boys Over Flowers.
Oh, yeah.
It kind of reminded me of the main character's name, I'm forgetting, just the way she kind of stands up for herself, because I feel like you don't see that as much in, like, shoujo anime versus, I don't know, typical shounen anime.
I think it depends. It's definitely an archetype of, like,
the
tough girl who's, like, in, you know, kind of a character to admire, to be like, you know.
Yeah, and she's, like, the main character in this show, so I kind of just, I just like that attribute in her.
yeah for me it definitely reminds me of, like, older magical girls. They're always, like, really brash and just unafraid to say how they feel, so it's fun. Good role model for girls. I think so
even though they always called her a tomboy, like, it's a bad thing. And I think Daichi even calls her ribbon boy in one of the episodes. Yeah, and I was kind of like, oh, that's okay, Daichi, going to go to come for her like that. Like,
yeah, we'll have to talk about that a little bit more in a second.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, so after this whole scenario with Himiko saving Yuga from kidnapping and getting her back to the show in time, because they still have to put on the play of Peter Pan.
Oh, yeah. After all this,
you know, there's still a performance to do, but Yuka realizes, like, oh, Himiko's, like, just genuinely a good person, and that's why Daichi is hanging out with her. And so after that, they decide to be friends after, you know, she apologizes and everything. So it's nice. Yuga also pretends to faint so that Himiko can be Peter Pan, which is interesting. Just, like,
yeah,
she's just very non-confrontational.
I felt like that by then we knew we liked her character. Maybe more than the start of the episode.
Sure.
Start of the arc.
Sure.
Yeah.
But then in the next episode, it's revealed that she has to move back away. She'd only been able to be in town for a short time. And Himiko and Yuka really bond a lot. It's very interesting. And then also Daichi as well, like, kind of remembers this promise that he had made to her, because it's her birthday, of course it is, yeah, about, like, climbing this tree that they wanted to climb when they were kids. So, yeah, after that, she's gone, And we're going to cut off here at 31, like the true halfway point here. But just to mention episode 30, this is where Pink comes back. Because, again, the magical world version of Daichi being a prankster is also in love with the, I guess technically in love with the magic world version of Hikaru, which is like, you know, the reverse. It's very funny. And he had plans to put her into this enchanted sleep. Like, he had created the Sleeping Beauty potion and was gonna like pour it on her so that he could kiss her awake and they could fall in love, which is like so bad. Absolutely wild. But it ends up landing on Pink instead. And so only true love's kiss can break the spell. So they have to rush her to the human world, and Pokuto has to find her. But Kantaro, the crow, drops her in the middle of the street, and you know, being a sleeping little pink cat, she's mistaken for a plushie. It's a whole ordeal, all this comedy of errors, and it's really wild. But in the end, they do make it in time, and Pokuto is able to kiss her, and she wakes up, and everything is all better. Yay. And then she gets to go back home. But it's just so wholesome again with those two. Mm-hmm. But it was just like, what a wild adventure.
That was a really cute episode.
Yeah.
Pokuto kind of reminds me of Kiro from Cardcaptor Sakura.
Sure.
Because he's a lion type looking creature too, or plushy looking, I should say. I don't know. I feel like maybe Clamp was a little inspired by this anime.
Sure, it's possible. Mm-hmm. Definitely very, very similar. Like, actually, I wouldn't say they have similar personalities. They're both also a little brash, but like Pokuto's just like a good boy.
Yeah, he's more innocent.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, and then episode 31 is a little bit more of a kind of episodic episode, if you will, but it's about Mother's Day and Himiko and her sisters, you know, her older sister Aiko and her younger sister Yumiko, they all decide to make things for Mother's Day for their mother, who is a very hardworking writer. You know, it's a very sweet episode. At first, Himiko, like, she wants to make cookies, but she's really, really bad at it, and she almost decides to go buy cookies and pretend that she made them. And then she catches Hikaru doing exactly that. And it's like, wait a second, that's what I was going to do. Now that she's doing it, I realize that's bad. So I have to go make them myself. And she makes a copy of herself. So the two Himikos are making cookies in the kitchen, which is very funny. So I guess that's allowed. And yeah, everything works out. But yeah, so that's the first half of this show. So I've been kind of blabbing a lot about like story and stuff, but is there anything you wanted to touch upon, or like character moments or anything like that?
Let's see. You kind of covered a lot of them. I have some notes here.
Yeah. I want to hear what you think.
I really didn't like Hikaru. What was her last name again? Hibino.
Hibino,
because they usually call her that. That's why I remembered her as Hibino. And then I felt like she had a redeeming kind of little moments later on, but I feel like she's kind of like similar to every anime archetype where there's just like a mean girl. But actually, I really liked kind of having the dynamic of her in the show. The show is just very wholesome and like,
yes,
without being like too cheesy or like for too young of an audience. So I feel like kind of like our anime fan kind of age range of magical girl fans, this just kind of has like that good balance of the drama and like the cuteness, and I think that's just a really good quality that makes the show really enjoyable.
Yeah, it's interesting because there is this mix of like really episodic stories and then also an actual like overarching plot.
Yeah,
and definitely, you know, I'm sure the second half will be a lot more of that. But it's really wild to like look back at just half the show and see how much happened. I mean, this girl died and came back to life and like was dealing with like different love triangles. It's like such a busy teenage life.
Yeah. I was actually thinking, there's so much of the show where like she's off doing who knows what, like away from her family. And they have no idea about most of this.
I do think that, you know, it's interesting. It's a very 90s show in that way. Like, it's definitely not the case so much now that you can just have a kid just like always be out or whatever. Like,
yeah,
you know, there's a lot of times where she just like goes out and it's like, I'm going, not like, can I go out or whatever, you know. Daichi also has like this secret hideout that Himiko also gets to hang out there. Yeah, I was
about to ask about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't remember exactly how that happened. I just remember they were always there when something bad happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just kind of like I was like, well, that's kind of a cool place to get away from, I don't know. Everyone else doesn't know about the magic world.
Yeah, just like an abandoned house. And it was definitely very useful when, you know, Himiko was stuck in, you know, Hibita's body. But it was like...
This is not like a spoiler, but they definitely go back there a lot in future episodes. Because you didn't mention certain things, so you haven't gotten there yet. Mm-hmm. But that's why I remember it so well. It's definitely going to keep... They're going to keep going back there.
Yeah. But yeah, just like really fun... Again, just like fun adventures all around, and I'm sure there'll be more to come. But yeah, do you have, I guess, a favorite character or favorite episode in terms of like just like one-off stories?
Well, okay, Pokuta is a favorite of mine, of course. I already mentioned. Well, I did really like, I think it's like the third episode where like Daichi sees Himiko transformed into him. Mm-hmm. That was just a really funny episode. And then I think you already mentioned my other favorites, the ones we kind of went over. Okay, the fact that she died was already like...
Yeah.
So crazy. But there's more to come. There's even crazier later on in the series. But it's on the same lines of like stuff happening like that. Just out of nowhere, it's like, hey, something cute happens. And then something wild happens in the next episode. Mm. And that's what kind of keeps this series interesting, because I feel like it would get kind of boring if just every episode she turned into somebody and like fixed a problem. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of what's really cool about this show. And it kind of, I guess if someone's a really big fan of other magical girl shows from the 90s, and this is probably one that maybe not a lot of people have seen. So I definitely recommend it if you're a fan of the genre and just want to kind of dabble into something else from that era.
Yeah. I think it's, again, it's like very wholesome. I mean, we do have to talk about the kind of major problem of gender roles, which is like a really big part of the show. It's very interesting because, like, you know, again, Himiko's like character archetype is very much like one we've seen before, especially in older magical girl shows. Like these kind of, maybe not necessarily even like tomboyish characters, but like, you know, girls who are, you know, rough and tumble and brash and like are not afraid to speak their mind are really, really common in older magical girl shows. So like her character type makes sense, but there's this constant reminder from characters all around her that like she is not ladylike, she's not girly, you know, especially with her like comparing herself to her older sister Aiko, who is all those things. Though, obviously we later learn that Aiko has insecurities about that and wishes sometimes that she could be a little bit more like her younger sister. But, like, it can be, like, a little exhausting. You know, like, as you mentioned in the beginning of the show, Daichi kept calling Himiko a boy even when she was, like, you know, wearing a girl's uniform and wearing a ribbon. Like, just because her hair is short and she's not speaking as, like, ladylike, I suppose. There's even one episode early on where I can't remember if it's Daichi or someone else. I do think it is Daichi that like uses a homophobic slur towards her, which is like really out there.
Really? I don't remember that. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I could imagine that fan subs would tone that down.
Yeah, I was wondering if maybe they just didn't translate that as well.
It's like the Japanese equivalent of the F slur that was used for her.
Wow, okay. 90s was crazy in anime.
Yeah, I'm gonna say like basically almost every 90s magical girl show you hear that slur at least once, because it's like it was very frequent at that time for kids shows.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so maybe I've heard it, seen it, just then the translations never you know represented that.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there's this whole thing, and you know, obviously with like Daichi in particular, he is more open to accepting Himiko as a girl later on. But like there is, you know, sometimes where like her father, when he's like talking to himself, will make comments about like, oh, it's a good thing Himeko's like talking to boys. Maybe she does have a chance or whatever. Like,
Yeah, savage.
yeah, it's like
Dad,
it's
gosh.
very strange. Or like, yeah, there. I think there is at least one time where like Daichi calls their home phone, and they're like, oh, obviously he's not there to talk to Himeko, he's gonna be talking to Aiko, the older sister. Like, it's stuff like that. Like, it's just it's very wild what things they put Himeko through. You know, obviously we see that like she is very much a girl, she has lots of the same emotions that any girl does, but it's like the people around her like keep trying to put her into this box like one way or another. So it's very interesting to see like how she deals with that. And I think that there in a way is a little bit of kind of commentary on that stuff. But you know, especially like we said with her copy being like this very, very feminine girl who like speaks incredibly formal feminine Japanese, to the point where like, you know, at this point halfway through the show, Daichi knows that she can transform. He doesn't know that she has this new ability to make a copy of herself. So like when he interacts with the other Himeko, he's always like, are you okay? Are you sick? Like, why are you talking like that?
Oh,
And like in general, people are always kind of responding to the way that she speaks in that form is like being very, very strange, which it is. It's very much unlike her. But, you know, having that kind of, again, be her like lesser self in a way, it does feel weird because it's like either like, oh, there is a girly Himeko inside her somewhere, or it's like the lesser version is more feminine while the masculine quote unquote version is like better somehow. So it's just like messy,
It's kind of
basically.
like what kind of point were they trying to make with that
Right.
comparison?
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought it's kind of I wonder like what kind of the character type of her being like this tomboy and she's kind of like made fun of it the whole time versus like later shows, magical girl shows like Utena or even Sailor Moon, Sailor Uranus, they're like praised for that. I don't know, it's because they're older. The in those magical girl shows, or that the shows came out in later years, possibly. It's just an interesting comparison that I just didn't think about before.
Yeah, like I'm trying to think back to like older shows. I feel like it is more common to see at least a little bit of commentary on their personality or like saying that they act not girly enough in some way or another. But like oftentimes they'll have kind of girly sides also, if that makes sense. But yeah, I think that like after this, there's definitely a lot less of them having to make commentary on it, I think. So it is interesting. But yeah, I guess, is there anything else you wanted to say about the show in general?
Just that I really enjoyed it as like a kind of like a I thought it was going to be like a throwaway kind of magical girl show that I wouldn't really be into. And then as like the first couple episodes, it just was like, oh, I gotta see where this goes. And I don't want to say anything else. I don't want to spoil anything for you, especially. But there's just some really funny or like I dramatic like moments that you wouldn't expect in the series to kind of like keep you on your toes as a viewer.
Sure, yeah.
That maybe you'll talk about in a future episode.
Yes, of course. Definitely we'll come back to it at some point. I think it's definitely an interesting show for a myriad of reasons, especially considering like it does a really good job of balancing the toyetic aspect of the show, right? So she does get new items
She
over time,
does,
and I know I'm
yeah.
sure she gets more after this. One thing I thought that was interesting is that we didn't talk about it, but you know, after she gets her palette, she also gets this book, and she gets a special magic pen, which of course are all items you would get. But in particular, it gives her the ability to write to Erica and for Erica to write back to her, so like they can talk to each other, they can communicate despite being in different worlds, which is really interesting. And it's also important because there are a lot of times where like the first few episodes, like Himeko's like running around like a chicken with no head, unable to figure out what to do about certain situations, and Erica's like, the answer is right there, come on, but she can't say anything. And so it's very funny.
And now they can actually communicate, and it kind of changes things up a little.
Their dynamic is really interesting again, because I knew about the kind of premise of the show, but like I kind of assumed that like Erica would just like show up in the first episode and then just like never come back. So it was kind of interesting to see that she's actually a recurring character, and like, you know, we see her almost every episode responding to the events and writing about them, because for her it's also like a scientific experiment, which is interesting.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering about that in the like premise, because I actually just watched the first episode again earlier today, and you mentioned it at the beginning, like she had to find someone that looked like her to test this like experiment, is how it was like phrased.
Yeah, it's her invention. This really is her invention.
And it was kind of like, so you're just gonna mess with this teenage girl's life for a while. it's kind of a funny plot almost.
Yeah, I mean, the insinuation is, and you know, it comes up when Daichi finds out about it, is that like, if anything were to go wrong, then her memory of the, of all the magic stuff would be wiped, so it's fine. Like, you can imagine that this is going on all around the human world with like these magic people coming in with their little inventions to test out stuff. But it is, yeah, it's like really, it's really interesting for that reason, like this kind of concept of like a scientific approach to magic in a way.
I've never really seen a show do quite something like that. So it has a little bit of unique elements,
right? Yeah, it's definitely, it's a fun kind of like in between where you see these like things that are about to be more common with like the toyetic magical girls of the 90s, and then also like you see so much of the older magical girls in her story. So yeah, I think that from my experience, it's a show that like basically everyone that has watched it or read it like really love it. It's got like great reviews from what I could see. It's got a perfect 5 stars on Amazon, which is where I watched it.
Oh, nice.
So it is popular. But yeah, I think, yeah, it's got like a kind of special place for that reason. There's like all these little things in terms of its like place in the genre. It's a pretty special little show. But yeah, and I do want to point out as well, I think I can't possibly talk about this show without mentioning the voice actress who plays Himeko is Ikue Ohtani, and this is pretty early in her career, all things considered. Like, this is the voice actress who is, she has done other magical girls since then. She is most famous for being Pikachu, though.
Oh yeah, I did read that.
Yeah. She's really cool, and like this is kind of like one of her big roles, right? Because obviously Pokemon's not for a little while longer. She does like a few other shows. Like, she starts in the mid-80s, but like she like really hits it off in the 90s, right, with all these different roles. So she voices both Himeko and Erica, and then yeah, she's in Sailor Moon, she's in Miracle Girl, she's in Doremi, she's in Freakier. Like, she's got a lot of magical girls under her belt, so it's pretty awesome.
All the icons.
Yeah. So it was really cool to see, like, oh yeah, I know this voice because she is that. Like, she's everything.
Well, now I'm going to listen to her in some of those shows as well that I haven't seen yet. Some of those I haven't seen in years, like Miracle Girls. I haven't watched that since high school.
yeah. Goodness, I think we have been chatting for a while, but we kind of just kind of, I don't want to say like we rush through things. I think that this show again is like really interesting, and there's a lot of stuff going on in terms of the history and like the different characters. I guess I'm curious what you think of this the romance in the show, because like it is definitely I think especially considering like the way magical girls have gone over time, like romance is like less and less present in magical girls.
Yeah, and that sucks.
Okay, yeah, what can you tell me more?
I don't want to say I don't like the newer magical girl shows, because there isn't really that much by comparison to the 90s, but even like in Precure, I haven't seen that many seasons, and maybe that's why I'm not as interested in them, is because I like the romance elements in magical girl shows. That maybe probably that's why I really liked this one. Even though it was very innocent romance, most of them are, but like versus like other shows where they are couples, you know, eventually in the series, this show doesn't really have that. It's just kind of like hinted at, like, oh, maybe one day. They're too young, right? Basically, is kind of what in the show.
Sure.
Besides like the the older characters, like her sister.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of reminded me of other shoujo series, like Marmalade Boy specifically. Have you seen that show? I just want to make sure if you would get the references or not.
I haven't watched Marmalade Boy, but I read the comics
Oh, okay. I'm
back in the
assuming the
day.
comic is very similar as far as the storyline. But in the anime, at least, I haven't read the comics. Every new arc, they would just introduce more characters into like the love triangle situation. And I thought that's what this was gonna. This had a little bit of that, which I thought was cool. I thought it was gonna go that route, like when Daichi's like childhood friend, I'm just forgetting her name.
Yeah, Yuka.
I thought maybe that was gonna be like a whole even like longer drawn out thing that would go on. But I was kind of glad that it didn't last too long, because sometimes that gets a little annoying. It just there's oh, there's a new like love interest rival. But this one just kind of had a little bit of that, which I liked that it wasn't too drawn out. But you know, it made it fun. So the romance in this was really cute versus maybe newer magical girls that just kind of they don't really focus on that anymore. Sucks for me, but
Yeah, we'll see. In Pretty Cure in particular, the only shows that have like even remote hints at romance is like Yes, Pretty Cure 5. That story is actually getting a sequel this year, so a lot of people are wondering if they're going to push it into romance. I think part of it is also Pretty Cure as a younger audience, like a target demographic, than any of the other
true,
shows that do have romance. So I think that's probably a major factor. We do know canonically that there's a kind of pairing in Delicious Party Precure that don't actually get together in the show, but has been confirmed by staff to become an item later in life,
yeah.
which is very exciting for fans that ship them. But you know, it is something where it's like, you know, it's not really part of the story, it's not a vital part of the story, but it's still like there if you want that information, if you want to ship them. But yeah, the romance aspect is definitely not as common anymore. So it's interesting. I'm still kind of processing how I feel about that. I can understand why in Precure's case, but I don't know. There's room for romance sometimes, I feel like.
Definitely.
Yeah, so I'm definitely looking forward to see how the romance is in this show later on. So I guess, yeah, that's everything to talk about with the show. So we're down to our final question. So, Jimmy, what do you hope to see in the future of the magical girl genre?
Well, the romance that we already mentioned, or just kind of more of like a revival of like the classic kind of magical girl stories, because I'm kind of tired of like the tragical girl is what like it's being called, kind of like Madoka and all the ones that came after that. To me, they're kind of similar, so I don't usually even watch a lot of them. Every now and then I'll check one of them out, and then sometimes we do get like kind of like the magical boy shows, like those are really fun. I'd like to see even more of those. And maybe more LGBT representation in magical girls, because I think I mentioned it last time since we talked about She-Ra. And even in that seems to be happening in the more international produced shows like Miraculous Ladybug. I know you're only on the first season. I can't remember if there's anything in the first season, but later on there's a lot more representation within the cast of characters, even if they're not main characters. It's at least seen. The characters are seen. So hopefully we get more of that in anime again. I feel like that was prevalent more in like the 90s and 2000s in maybe this genre. Obviously I don't keep up with all a lot of the newer shows, but I don't hear as much from like the fans as much, but maybe more of that would be great with the romance as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's something that it's like very much, and we do talk about it often on the podcast, that like there's definitely more, it's more likely to happen in a Western produced show, and then also like a lot of like indie stuff like webcomics and games and what have you really, really go in on diversifying everything about the genre. So it's kind of like where we can look to for now. I do hope that there are more chances for Japanese shows to also do that. I think there would be more opportunities if they just go ahead and try it. I think, yeah, we'll see what happens.
I think that's funny because I feel like in anime that was more prevalent back in the, like 90s and 2000s than there was at all in like Western animation, and that kind of inspired, that in creators nowadays. And I was on a show, it's only available in Canada currently, that talked about this topic, and I mentioned that Sailor Moon, kind of in that era of anime versus like She-Ra. She-Ra was what we were talking about on this show, LGBT representation. So I just think it's kind of a interesting dynamic that it's kind of gone backwards a little bit, maybe, or flipped, I should say.
Yeah, I do think that part of it is at least on the Japanese side, I do think it has to do with like more restrictions on children's programming in particular. I mean, we did get a little bit something in this decade because Fairy-Rama-Do does have queer representation. It has romance between men, like actual kissing levels.
Yeah, I've only seen a little bit of it, but that's on my list to like
Oh
watch
yeah, you should
all the way through.
definitely. I feel
Yeah,
like there
for
would be a lot
sure.
of like the drag inspiration, from a show
Yeah,
like that.
I listened to your episode about it also, so.
Yeah, definitely is one to check out for that because it is. Yeah, it was definitely like not expected as a source of representation, and then we got it, so it was like really exciting. So there's a chance. It just depends on like demographics and what people are willing to do. So we'll see what happens. But yeah.
Can I ask, since you mentioned it, what changed in the restrictions,
There was a pretty big
or
kind of
when?
shift in the 90s regarding like restrictions on children's programming in general. I don't know like very, very specific details, but like basically there was more put into like listening to like parent complaints and like deciding what is appropriate for children. Because I mean, one thing, for example, with the pre-care time slot, Sunday mornings at 8:30. Before pre-care, there was Nadia, and then before Nadia was Doremi, and before Doremi was Ghost Sweeper Mikami, which is like completely a different show. Like, it's got like a very, very sexy main character. You would probably like it if you haven't watched this show.
I'm Googling it
I mean, it's a great show, but it is so different. And it's like you would not show it to kids now, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Ghost Saber Pikami is like Cutie Honey meets Yu Yu Hakusho, basically.
Okay, I've actually seen I've never watched the show, but I've seen like the artwork before. Okay, got it. Your description sounds perfect from what I'm looking at.
Yeah, and
Okay,
I've seen the
it
whole
looks
show.
cool.
It is very entertaining, but it is really hard to imagine that that was in the same time slot as Precure is today. So, things have changed a lot as far as like the expectations of children's media.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, we'll see what happens in the future, but it's a complicated subject and it's like if you ask enough people, they are down for the representation, but then when you get to children's media, then it becomes a different subject because not all parents feel the same way about that stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, we're dealing with a lot of that in the US right now
Yeah, we are.
as well. So, as of this year, unfortunately. So, I get it. We're all kind of going with the flow on that. I'm trying to open doors, I guess,
Yeah, for sure.
and keep them open.
It's a difficult topic as well, because like just like in the US there are, people who are all about it and a lot of, other people who are not. So it's tough. But yeah, I guess that's everything we had to talk about today. So I don't want to end in such a kind of bummer note. Actually, I forgot to ask earlier because we were talking about stuff you've been like watching in the genre, but I guess as far as like your dragon stuff, is there anything new, like magical girl wise, that you've been doing?
Oh, yes. Anime Expo is coming up soon, and I'm going to be debuting my Wedding Peach cosplay.
Ooh.
because Wedding Peach is one of my favorite Magical Girl series.
That one also has a lot of romance, so that makes sense.
Absolutely, yeah. And one that I haven't quite finished, but I have everything kind of here, but I need to like sew some things that didn't quite work out with her outfit, was Creamy Mommy.
Oh, okay.
And I feel like that one's going to be hit or miss with like people that recognize her, not in a bad way, but you got to be kind of hardcore fan in the genre, really.
Yeah, I'm sure that's a big thing that, you know, is a deciding factor in you creating outfits to begin with, is like recognizability.
Well, kind of, but at the same time, like, I'll do them just because I want to. Like, sure. Wedding Peach is, here in the US, is not very recognizable. Like, even though it did get a U.S. release years later, like on DVD, not like on television. Mm. But you got to be kind of like from that era probably to know her. Obviously, when I did Candy Candy, that was almost like a joke that like I said to my friend, I was like, oh, my God, I love this anime. I'm going to cosplay her. And she was like, okay, why would you do that? Why that character? And then I did it. And she's got, you know, people recognize her, especially if they're grew up like in Latin America that right. live here now, or their family, you know, they're like, mm-hmm. oh my God, that's my, like, my mom's favorite anime. That's always the thing they would say at the last, when I wore her to Anime Expo last year. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I think I have a couple others. I haven't started them, but I really want to do Saint Tail.
Oh yeah.
And also these ones I'm not necessarily gonna perform in this, but I will, just for myself. I don't care if the audience doesn't really get it. I mean, Creamy Mommy would probably be like the most fun because people might not get it, but they would be like, oh, it's 80s and she's a singer,
right?
I would mix in like some 80s songs maybe. I did just do the American version of Sailor Moon that leaked.
Oh, yes.
Saban Moon.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I did a cosplay of that. And at Anime Expo, I'm going to do a whole group with all the Sailor Scouts.
Oh, perfect. Fantastic.
So that should be really fun. I hope everyone gets it together. We got like another month or so, month and a half.
mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what's new for me there.
Actually, I definitely, I did want to ask about this because, I just briefly mentioned earlier, I very strongly feel that Cutie Honey has a lot of looks, especially the original 70s Cutie Honey, has a lot of looks that are like very drag appropriate.
Yeah.
So I'm very curious about how you would feel about that, just in general. Okay, not like, yeah. Well, you should do that, but.
Yeah, I did do like Honey's kind of normal outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Like her kind of casual attire, because that was my favorite look that she had. I just liked her mm-hmm. long blonde hair.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do kind of want to do her warrior outfit, and I do have like a big breastplate now that would look great because that was kind of the thing. But for me, when I do drag cosplays, like I'm how do I say this? I'm like a hairy man and I'm not like someone that shaves, so like that's kind of a thing of like, oh, if the outfit is kind of like revealing, how's that gonna work? But Honey, right. I could do that with like the breastplate. And I kind of would love to do some kind of performance, same thing, no one's gonna get it, and probably except for maybe some anime fans, where like I do some kind of reveal into like her warrior outfit, like a transformation.
Ooh, yeah.
Which people have done as Sailor Moon, but I would love to do it as Honey one day. And actually, I've since the last been on the podcast, I have started my own drag show at anime conventions or other kind of nerdy events. I've done it. It's called House of Cosplay.
Mm.
And the Instagram is House of Cosplay Drag. And so it was actually the first full drag show at any anime convention in Southern California, surprisingly, of all places. Mm-hmm. This was the first one, and I produced it. And so we're trying to take it to other conventions and other events. And so I have a couple in the works coming up. So that's kind of, maybe I could do something like one of those kind of performances, maybe more at like an anime convention like that.
Mm, sounds good. Sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah. Jimmy, thank you so much for coming on the podcast again to talk about Himetan's Ribbon.
Yes, thank you for having me, and thank you for it was kind of my suggestion, I guess, a while ago for being interested in
Yeah,
doing it. Yeah.
of course, of course. So where can people find you and follow you online to talk to you about Hime-chan and other magical girls?
Yeah, I'm on basically all social media just as my name, Jimmy Sherfy, but I mostly use Instagram and Facebook would be the two easiest ones to find me.
Awesome. Great. So those links will be in the show notes. But yeah, thank you again for coming on, and I hope you have a good rest of your day.
Yay, thank you, you too.
Whether this was your first or last time listening, thank you so much for checking out this episode of Sparkle Side Chats with Magical Girl Ayu. We hope you check out the rest of our chats, over 2 years of magical content and counting. And if you like what you heard, tell a friend, or tell 5 friends, or tell the whole world by talking about us online. If you use social media, don't forget to use the hashtag SparkleSideChats when talking about and sharing the podcast. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at MagicalGirlAyu, spelled AYU, and you can find me at AyuShinos, AyuShekNows. You can also email us at sparklesidechats@gmail.com. Did you know we also take recommendations for future guests and topics? Just fill out the form in the show notes. You can even suggest yourself if you're so bold. The very best free way to support the podcast is using your podcast platform to give a rating and review of our little show. This gives the big internet machines the message that they should share it with more people, and I think we all want that, don't we? You can also join the Discord server for this podcast to talk about magical girls 24/7, often chatting directly with me and both previous and upcoming guests of the podcast. The forever link is in the show notes as well as on the socials, so be sure to stop by. Show notes can be found on your podcast platform of choice or at our main landing page at anchor.fm/sparkleside. If you have a few bucks, you can give a one-time donation at ko-fi.com or ko-fi.com/ayushinos. You can also commit to a monthly membership, which grants you access to bonus episodes about magical girls and adjacent content such as movies, comics, and other series that magical girl fans tend to also love. All it takes is $5 a month, but if you want to rank up, that'll give you discounts on art commissions and monthly requests as well. Music credits, as always, are also in the show notes. Original podcast music is by Hazel. You can find her on Twitter at A Few Bruises. Thanks again for listening, and remember, you are magical, forever and always. See you next time!